Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some great guests on. In the first half, we're going to talk to Dr. Hilary Chambers about staying soft, flexible, and clear. And in the second half, we're going to talk to Reese Hart about men's health and understanding how to stay well and strong well into later life. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
Air pollution from the burning of fossil fuels may increase the risk of Parkinson's disease, new research shows. People who were exposed to the highest levels of nitrogen dioxide, commonly released by vehicles and power plants, were 40% more likely to have the disease compared with people who had the lowest levels of exposure. The study adds to growing evidence that exposure to pollutants and chemicals in the environment plays an important role in the development of Parkinson's, a disease of the nervous system that makes people less able to control body movements. Sunju Jong, a professor in the Department of Neurology at the University of Ulsan College of Medicine in Seoul, South Korea, said those findings might help explain the biological origins of the disease while also helping people avoid it. Chong is the lead author of the new study, which was published in the journal JAMA Neurology. The American Food and Drug Administration has approved marketing for a device that will help diagnose autism spectrum disorder in children between the ages of 18 months and 5 years who show potential symptoms. Cognoa ASD Diagnosis Aid is a machine learning-based software program that receives information from parents or caregivers, video analysts, and healthcare providers to help doctors evaluate whether a child is at risk of having autism. Many children are not diagnosed with autism disorders until later in childhood, which in some cases delays treatment and early intervention. According to the FDA, autism may be detected as early as 18 months, but the average age of diagnosis is 4.3 years. The FDA emphasized that the device is only designed to help doctors diagnose autism in children. It isn't designed to diagnose children on its own. Practicing the meditative, rhythmic flow of Tai Chi works just as well as aerobic exercise and strength training for achieving some health benefits, such as reducing waist size and improving cholesterol, new findings suggest. Results of a randomized controlled trial published online May 31st in the Annals of Internal Medicine show that people who have a tough time with some kinds of aerobic exercise may gain similar benefits from Tai Chi. The study is very impressive, says Bhavani Nadeswaran of the University of California, Irvine's Susan Samueli Integrative Health Institute, who was not involved in the study. She says many people have arthritis or back pain, and aerobic exercise can be hard on them. She added the good thing about exercises like Tai Chi and yoga is that they are low impact. And finally, a new quick and painless sensor that measures blood sugar in human sweat may mean far fewer finger pricks for the millions of people who live with diabetes. Monitoring blood sugar to make sure it remains in the target range is the cornerstone of diabetes management, but the pain and inconvenience of daily fingerprints can be a deterrent for many. The investigational touch-based test measures blood sugar in sweat and applies a personalized algorithm that correlates it with glucose in blood. According to a new proof-of-concept study, it's more than 95% accurate at predicting blood glucose levels before and after meals. The study was published recently in the journal ACS Sensors.
We have Dr. Hilary Chambers back with us today. She's a naturopathic physician, and she is also the chief spokesman and education ambassador for Healthology. Today, we were going to pick her brain about how to stay flexible and soft and clear and well into our later ages. So welcome, Hilary.
Thank you so much, Kathy. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, it's so good to have you on the show. So, you know, we get, as we age, we seem to get a little stiffer and a little foggier, and just things don't seem to work as well as, you know, you get in your 50s, your 60s, and things slow down. Are there things that we can do to keep the inflammation down and keep our bodies more mobile, more flexible?
There's a lot we can do, and you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, as we age, it's normal to start seeing more aches and pains, and it's normal for our bodies to start to slow down. And part of that's just wear and tear. Part of it is, you know, injuries and things like that over the years. But another part of it is that we unfortunately don't always absorb nutrients as well from food as we age, just with changes to our digestive system. So there's lots of different reasons for this. So sometimes adding some supplements into our daily life can be one helpful thing that we can do in order to try to combat some of those effects of aging that are naturally just going to be occurring.
What are some better ideas? Like, it's very tempting to use acetaminophen or just things just to block the pain and keep on going. What are some other options?
So you're right. Acetaminophen is tempting, right? But instead, we can actually use something that Mother Nature provides us, white willow bark. And this actually is the same type of analgesic effect, meaning painkiller effect, that that we get from aspirin. Aspirin was actually derived from white willow bark. So we can actually go back to our roots and really just use the herb itself. And what it does is it blocks that sensation of pain. But then at the same time, it's really more well-rounded and anti-inflammatory. So it helps to lower the inflammation in the body at the same time as preventing that sensation of pain.
So if we take it on a daily basis, over the course of weeks, there's less for it to do.
There is lots that it can do. We actually see that pain-blocking impact from it right away, which is really something that's helpful. And then, you know, for wanting to be taking something more long-term, I usually suggest making sure we're pairing it with multiple other anti-inflammatories and other things that can reduce swelling and stiffness and pain. That way we're getting a really nice long-term and well-rounded approach.
And the first thing that always comes up in my mind is curcumin, turmeric.
Yeah.
Is that something that's just plain good food and should be taken all the time as we begin to age?
Yes, curcumin is one of my absolute favorites. It's actually part of my daily routine of what I take. All it does is it works by preventing the body from producing some of these what we call inflammatory mediators. Basically, I call them little fire starters that go around our body and cause inflammation. So it reduces that production. So we actually get right from the source less inflammation over time. So it's a wonderful thing to be taking. You can take it for the long term for most people, as long as it's safe to do so with your medications and your healthcare provider said that it's safe for you.
Mm-hmm. So basically, there's for white willow bark and curcumin, there's a very there's not really any reason not to take them. Is there any contraindications with anything with those?
With those guys, the white willow bark, I always want to make sure we're clear that there are some people who are taking aspirin for headaches, and there are people who are taking aspirin for the baby 81 milligram every day for prevention of heart attack and stroke. Mm-hmm. So if you're using it for headaches, white willow is a great substitution. But if you're using that medication for prescribed from your doctor for everyday use, 81 milligrams, you do not want to substitute. Don't come off of any medications, please.
Okay.
The white willow wouldn't be appropriate there.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as curcumin goes, it can have a little bit of blood thinning action. So if you are on any blood thinners, you want to watch out for that one there. There's a couple other nitty-gritties, like anti-epileptics, for example. But those are the top ones that we see
okay.
that would be common.
All right. And we also kind of think and feel like a tin man, like really, you know, the joints start to seize up a little bit. And oiling, like I think of oil, what kind of oils, internal, external, how do we keep those joints lubricated?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, definitely we'll talk about internal in one second, but I would be remiss if I didn't say water, water, water.
Okay.
I see that dehydration is often a part of the reason why we feel that stiffness. So make sure you're drinking lots of water.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, oils. We want to make sure we're taking omega-3 fatty acids, but specifically EPA. So that EPA is the most important type of omega-3. And what that does is it gives your body the resources it needs to make anti-inflammatory cells, anti-inflammatory mediators. So it actually can kind of go, those can go around the body and put out those little fires that might already be burning and reduce our inflammation and reduce our pain. So that's the most important one to make sure of is the EPA.
Interesting, Hillary. I'm just going to circle you back a bit, because right at the beginning, you suggested that the digestion has so much to play with whether we're going to even absorb these things or not, and whether we're going to, and how that's going to affect the stiffness in the body. What can we do to increase digestion and elimination?
So again, I'll say water, 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 making sure that's a very important thing. But the first thing I'd like to suggest is that meal hygiene, right? So we're making sure that we're getting that grumble, grumble, getting hungry type of feeling before we eat. So smell your food, get excited for what you're going to have, and then sit down and focus on your meal. Put down your fork between bites, chew thoroughly. We want to make sure we have that mechanical digestion in the mouth before we get down to the next level of digestion in the stomach. So that can really help. And oftentimes just eating too quickly is going to result in not absorbing nutrients, not absorbing and breaking things down well, and then it's going to make our pain and inflammation worse. And then lastly, we can be taking certain things to try to stimulate our digestion a little bit. Something like a digestive enzyme like lipase might even be right alongside. Oftentimes it's paired with a fish oil or already in a supplement to help us break things down. Or we can take things that are going to trigger other digestive enzymes like bitters. And those can be really helpful for getting our digestive juices flowing. And that way we break down foods better in the stomach and absorb our supplements or nutrients better as we move through the digestive tract.
Mm. Can we put bitters in just as food too? What would we use to stimulate that?
Yeah, there's a couple of food items I love. Apple cider vinegar is probably the most popular right now. I suggest just a tablespoon and a little bit of water, and you actually want to taste it. So you want that bitter action in the back of your mouth, you know, in the corners of your mouth, and you kind of go, ooh, mm-hmm. You want that to happen. And that's going to actually be what those glands there will trigger and stimulate the activity of stomach acid to start doing its function in the stomach, to actually start being pumped. You can use lemon or lemon water. That's a helpful one. Or bitter greens. So it's sort of that traditional sense of having a little salad before you move into your meal is something that makes a lot of sense from a perspective of triggering the production of stomach acids and digestive enzymes.
So the more we can get these little practices into our day and be conscious or thoughtful about them, the better off our bodies are going to be.
Absolutely. Every little thing we can do to help, right, is going to help to influence our overall wellness and how we feel with reducing pain and improving our quality of life.
Mm-hmm. So we have white willow bark, we have curcumin, we have fatty acids, we have water, 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 water. It sounds like water would be the most important thing. How much water is in our body, like as far as, you know, bones, water, that, like we're pretty high in water usually if we're hydrated, eh?
Yeah, it's interesting. So the body is actually about 60% water. And then some of our other organs in our body, like, for example, our brain and our heart, even have more water than that. But what we want to make sure that we do is keep our bodies hydrated enough that it doesn't have to. I think of those poor little cells struggling along if they don't have enough of this water. So that means drinking enough water to be urinating about every 2 hours or so is what I try to aim for my patients to get to.
And at first, when you try and get the water intake up, it might be a lot more than that every 2 hours.
Yeah, and you know what? Sometimes it takes a little bit for your body to get used to it. But if you're finding that you're urinating really, really frequently, you know, less than once an hour, or you're finding that your urine is completely clear, then maybe you've actually drank too much water. And so we want to make sure that we're, again, listening to our bodies. We're not forcing anything with drinking too much, but that we're just aiming for that happy medium where it's sort of that not quite clear urine and about every couple hours or so.
Hmm. Well, Hillary, that's lots to think about to get us moving. We're going to go to a quick break. And when we come back, let's discover more things we can do to keep flexible and fluid through our later years.